about time we talked technique on the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. It's an area that is always popular when we're talking about batting especially. And who better to talk technique than Pitch Vision Academy's very own batting coach, Gary Palmer. Welcome to the show, Gary.
Hi, Dave. Good to be back. We haven't spoken for a while.
Yeah, it's been a little while, but there's always an opportunity to talk about technical things. And this week, I wanted to get your opinion on the short ball. Playing the short ball, what kind of practice you need to do to face the short ball and when to bring it into a program. So what are your thoughts on that?
Well, first of all, obviously the short ball and playing quick bowling, whether you're playing club cricket in the second team and trying to get into the first team, or county second team to first team, or county cricket to test cricket, sometimes that can be the stumbling block to go get into that higher grade of cricket. And it can find out quite a few talented young cricketers. Some learn to deal with it along the way, and some people sort of, once they get it, they think, I don't like that, don't fancy it. And that's the difference between them making it sometimes or not making it. So I can understand the importance of being good at playing the short ball and obviously practicing it. But as far as practicing it, as a coach, I think it would be counterproductive to just go in a net and put the bowling machine up to 75, 80 and bang it in short at someone before you've actually worked on their technique of playing a back foot defence or drive over and around the wicket. I think that's really important, because a young lad might come into a net, never played balls at that pace. Maybe his technique's not right. Maybe he's too sideways on, which is a key thing in all this. Because if he's too sideways on and someone fires a bowling machine in short at his sort of throat or head or chest around that area, he's going to feel scared initially. Not because he's possibly scared, but because he's in such a bad position, he finds it hard to get at the ball. So therefore, unless he's had the coaching prior to going in that environment, he might back away, and the coach might think, well, he's fine, he's not very good. Well, actually, if he'd have been trained to be more open through gradual building up of the process, he would have found it easier to play and have been less scared of being hit. So for me, if I had to go in the net and teach this with somebody, number one, I'd never ever put a bowling machine above 75 short at someone's head, because indoors, some surfaces vary on how quick the ball comes through. The lighting in sports halls isn't always as bright as it should be. If some balls are old and some are new and one takes off, someone could get hit. And if you're going to take a young guy into a net and bowl that pace at him, especially if he's 13, 14 years old or younger, then he could get hurt. Psychologically, he could be put off the game. He might not want to go along to practice if every week he's going to get bombarded with short balls, because, you know, even me as an adult, I wouldn't find that much fun. So I think, first of all, you need to get your lads throw tennis balls at them, over, and more importantly, around the wicket, just so you can show them that more open body position. Then you'd probably want to do underarm feeds up at their body from over and around the wicket, again from sort of, I don't know, 10 yards away. Then you'd probably want to bounce the ball in over, then around the wicket. Then you'd probably get on the machine and bowl it, and build it up from maybe 55 miles an hour to 60 to 65, and make sure that you do all the over the wicket first. And then when you go around the wicket, get your speeds down again and gradually build the speeds up. So you're luring that player into being mentally or psychologically confident stage by stage of pushing it a bit further to play that short ball. Finally, I'd get a tennis racket and stand halfway down and hit them really hard and short around head height so they can duck it or defend it. And then after that, might go over the wicket first, outside off stump, so the player can see the ball going through and they know they're not going to get hit again. They're going to gain confidence. 65 miles an hour for me would be the limit for that. Round the wicket then, 65 miles an hour, so they can duck some and play some. And obviously, if you've got those orange bowling machine balls that are a bit softer, best to use those, because if they hit you, it's not going to do as much damage as a hard ball. So, you know, in summary, there is no point saying I'm going to challenge a young bloke and second session of the season, fire balls in at 80-odd miles an hour, because no one's going to bowl that pace at them anyway. All it's going to do is put them off the game. Now, when they're older, sort of 15, more so 16, 17, 18, they will learn to find processes to combat that fear. Because there can't be many people out there in professional cricket that would like the ball bowled past their nose at 90 miles an hour and say that they're not, you know, they like it. Because, you know, over the years, there have been a number of top players that have been frightened of the ball and being hit by it. But what they try and do is channel that fear into the game plan, into getting singles, into watching the ball, into getting, you know, hitting boundaries, whatever it is. So if you can channel it, you can control it. But if you just get a couple go past your nose and you just panic and go blank with no processes going on in your head, the only thing in your forehead in the front there, your main train of thought is, I'm going to be hit. Whereas that should be at the back of your head, or even not even in your head, but the process of what you need to do should be there. You should focus. The more you focus on that, the more you can diffuse the fear factor. So older kids will be able to work at the processes to overcome the fear and deal with it better than the young kids. But certainly up to 14, 15 years old, I, to be honest, I don't, personally as a coach, I don't do much of that. Even with my academy lads that are, some of them 20 years old and play second team cricket, we'll bang a few in sort of to play defence off the back foot over and round. Now, as long as they're in good positions, I know that in a match, when it's at their head, natural instinct should get them out of the way if they're backing themselves.
Now, one of the challenges of playing the short ball is to find out exactly when to do that kind of coaching. If you're doing it in the middle of the off season, then a player will go out to early season matches and probably not face a lot of short bowling because the pitches are softer, even in countries where the pitches are hard right from the start, you know, South Africa, Australia, the pitches are still softer at the start of the season. So there's going to be less bouncers bowled, there's going to be less aggressive short bowling around at the start of the season, and then as the season goes on, it tends to get more and more prevalent, especially when you're talking about players who are talented and playing a good standard of cricket. So how do you work out when to do this kind of coaching? Can you do it in the season? Do you have to do it in the off season? When's the best time to do it?
Well, as a coach, I'll give an example. We have an academy program which is 11 sessions, and over half of that to halfway point, I'm still doing loads and loads of front foot practices to really nail the basics and get them right. Then we'd start doing a little bit of back foot. Then we do some spin. As long as they're getting in good body position for all those basics, that's my first challenge, to get that sorted out. Then obviously you're going to test your players tactically. I would do the shorter stuff more at the back end of my program. So you get a gradual build into facing quicker deliveries. It's something that needs to be done, but it's certainly not something that needs to be done in your first couple of sessions. I think that would be, for me, that would be counterproductive.
And can you top it up in the season? Can you, thinking about particularly English cricket, but I mean, this applies anywhere, but early season, there's going to be less bouncers. Later on, when you're talking about later in the summer, there's going to be more short bowling, there's going to be more bouncers as the pitches get harder. Is it something you can go in the season, you can go, right, I'm going to work on doing this because I know in July and August there's going to be more bouncers around?
Not really. I think it's like everything. You've got to get yourself you've got to prepare yourself with all the shots and as many scenarios as you can in the winter. the other problem you've got there is if a young lad goes for a trial in the winter and somebody runs up who's a bit quicker than he's used to and bangs a few in, he needs to know to be able to deal with that. You know, and then you're going to go to your nets where someone's going to bowl short at you. You know, there's always going to be one person who's going to bang a few in. So it's something that you do need to do. And during the season, I think if you knew you were going to face a particular bowler in a particular team, you might go out in the nets. And I've seen Martin Crowe doing this, the New Zealander batsman, where someone's kneeling down from about 4 metres away, throwing the ball from the floor upwards, not bouncing, but just up at his head. So he just gets a feel for bobbing and weaving. I know if I had to go and play all over again, my favourite practice would be someone halfway down with a tennis racket, smashing it as hard as they possibly can, because you're not going to get hurt if you get hit by a tennis ball. Mm. And, you know, it'll be coming through quicker than anyone can bowl. So if you can bob and weave and get out of the way of the majority of them, that is going to build your confidence levels right up. So it is something that needs to be practiced. But some players might find they play it quite well without having to practice it at all, because they just react. You know, if you've got good reactions and you keep your eye on the ball and watch the ball, you should get out of the way of it. I can't think I've ever seen Viv Richards and Ian Botham in the nets practicing ducking and weaving the short ball, but... you know, they play it all right.
Yeah. Well, I think players like that, as an example, they are able to get into good positions, as you said. But also, I think they're very quick at picking up when a bowler's going to bowl a bouncer. You know, they know that a bouncer's coming, maybe even before the bowler's got into his delivery stride. There's just something about what they picked up. So is that something you can coach as well?
I'm not sure about what you've just said there, because I think the cardinal sin, whether it's in practice or in a match, is, let's say a quick bowler's just bowled you a bumper, it's gone past your nose. Now, you've got to be aware that he could bounce you, but the minute you start predicting is coming the next ball, that's when you get hit, because people think, right, this is going to be a bouncer. Yeah. So they're going to start, and if the bloke doesn't bowl quite as short, you might have already decided it's a bouncer, and you might start ducking it, when actually you could have stood up and played it. So doesn't matter how many have been bowled at you, you've got to think the next ball, just play it as I see it. I'm aware it could be a bouncer, but I mustn't think this next ball is definitely going to be one.
Yeah.
Because I think that's where you get a problem. And sometimes it's hard to think like that. I think, well, play it as I see it. You've been bounced a few times and you can just lose the plot a bit and think, oh, no, there's another one coming. And that's when it all goes wrong. That's when you get hit.
And you see top players doing that, don't you? So that is a good point. Even the best players can do that. So that's a difficult skill to have. But I'm thinking, what I was thinking about really there was players who are very quick at picking up line and length.
Yeah.
But not prejudging, but just they're just quicker at picking up line and length. And that's one of the hallmarks of a good player compared to an average player, is they seem to be quicker at picking up the line and length of the ball. So is that something that you can coach, or is that one of those things that is just an art that that some people get and some people don't get quite as quickly?
Yeah, I think some of these things probably initially are God-given for some people. Other people, through lots of practice of bouncers and various lengths and lines, are going to improve and get better at it. But, you know, it's like Viv Richards, you're talking to someone about someone extra special there. He must pick the ball up quicker and better than anybody else. Can you coach it to that level? Debatable. I don't know the answer to that question. You can certainly make someone better.
Yeah.
But I mean, another good point on this is sometimes it's good to get a lad in the net and try and get him to look to play the pull shot or the hook shot, whether it's same feeding process, you know, underarms, tennis balls, tennis racket. Because the interesting thing about that is when a lad's going in the net looking to hook or pull, their mindset is more attacking, mm-hmm. and the fear thing seems to be less. So they get in a good position to hook it, and they hook it. So I think quite a good process is, well, let's do some hooking first, learn how to do that, and then we'll learn to play the short ball. because you're taking it from an attacking point of view, and that's more of a confident point of view than, well, I'm looking to just duck and weave and defend and get out of the way. I think that works quite well.
So you, rather than thinking, oh God, a bouncer could come any minute, when you see a bouncer coming, you think, great, this is an opportunity to score a boundary, and then at the last second, if you think, oh hang on a minute, I'm not going to be able to hit this, be able to get out the way, but it's your last option rather than your first option.
Yeah, I mean, it depends on the nature of the position of it, or the type of game you're in, the scenario, whether you're opening the bat and you're just trying to occupy the crease or you're attacking it. But my point there was more in a practice environment.
Right.
So if you, for instance, maybe you do the pull and the hook shot first, and then you do the short ball afterwards, because you've already encouraged them to get into good positions because they're confident and positive because they're actually trying to hit the ball rather than avoid it. Which brings me on to something else. You see a lot of people practicing the pull stroke hook shot around the country these days, and every time I see it, it's always off the front foot. And I don't quite get that, because if you're going to teach it, by going back in the crease, getting some depth in the crease and time, and being able to free your arms and hook it in front of square, behind square, the West Indian way, and to swivel around, for me, that's the bog standard basic way of doing it. I think if someone's clever enough to be able to step forward and pull on the front foot, of which your options are limited, because it's very difficult to suddenly pull out of that and play a defence or duck it, whereas if you're going back and across onto all three, you've got more options. I'd like to see the old-fashioned, and what I think is probably the most effective way of hooking, being practiced more so before the new way. But again, it's quite, I understand that coaches out there who go on the courses, you know, like to show what they've learned and challenge themselves with all the different ideas. But at the end of the day, it's about what is best for the player down the other end. What is the quickest way for this player to get better and improve? It's not about me here doing as many fancy drills as I possibly can. That doesn't make me a good coach. What makes me a good coach, if I'm an individual out there coaching, is the outcome. So I deliver something to a player, information, drills, and that player gets better. For me, that's the art of good coaching. Good coaching isn't how many fancy drills I can do, because the drills need to be specific to what you're trying to achieve, and sometimes you don't always see that with coaching.
Now, we talked about a couple of different options there with playing the short ball. So yep. I know with you that certainly with front foot play, there's a lot of areas which are non-negotiable. The positions that people get in, the way that
for basics, that is only for basics in the V.
Exactly. So and it doesn't matter who you are, those basics apply to everybody. Yeah. Now, with playing the short ball, is there a little bit more wiggle room for individual response, like you were saying about the difference between hooking and leaving and playing?
Yeah, definitely, because it's quite a natural thing. You hear people talk about instinctive hookers. Some people just sort of do it on the crease, some go across the crease. It's quite a natural sort of, you know, thing to bottom-handed shot. Here's the ball, hit it square of the wicket. You know, that's all you got to do. As long as you've got the bottle to take it on, it's a shot that is instinctive. Yeah, you can do it slightly different ways. But again, you have to give someone a core structure to copy. So first base is go right back and across, get inside it or get in line with it and hook it. Mm-hmm. And hook it up for six. I don't see the point of trying to hook it for four. If you're going to hook, you might as well go for broke. And then from there, you might find people develop their own ways, and as long as they're effective doing that, that's fine. Keep doing it. Mm-hmm. But the problem today, I think, is if you take the 80s, there were a lot more quick bowlers around, more quick bowlers in abundance. So every team had them, and some of them were real quick, to the point where you're talking Mitchell Johnson pace now here. To hook or pull Mitchell Johnson off the front foot
in Perth,
it's going to be suicidal, and you need a good dentist. Right? But, you know, if you go back to the Malcolm Marshall, Michael Holding days, the Wayne Daniels, Sylvester Clark, 90% of players, before they're going to let go of the ball, would be starting to go back and across on all three. do you know what I mean? They wouldn't. I doubt whether they would be hooking off the front foot because it would be too quick. So why not teach the way that's going to work for all speeds rather than have one that works against the medium pacers and then all suddenly, as Mitchell Johnson's arrived, and oh, that doesn't work. What else have we got in the locker?
Now, going back to the younger players playing the short ball, and the way that coaches do it is sort of just set the bowling machine to go and see how they react to it.
Yeah.
Just playing devil's advocate, I guess. Is there an argument to say that we want to see how these players react to that situation, and it's kind of we want to see if it's a sink or swim thing, or is it just overall too damaging to even say, right, we're going to challenge these players and see what happens, and then go back to the drawing board? Or would you start at the drawing board and build it up always?
What age are you talking here?
Is there a difference between different ages?
Well, if you're say a county 17-year-old upwards, you would like to think that player has got all of their basics in order, right? And they've had some really good coaching. Therefore, if you went over or around the wicket, they would get into some decent positions, so they're in a good place to find out whether they've got the bottle or not. So if you've got 10 players all doing it, all 10 players should have good technique, and this is now where you're going to find out which player's just got that little bit extra. And that, to me, makes sense. But if you're just going to do that with lads that are riddled with lots of little flaws, which a lot of kids at county levels are,
yeah,
then you're not going to get a true perspective on whether the kid's got the bottle or not. I mean, I'll give you an example. I had a boy come to my academy, he was 17 years old, a pace bowler, decent batter, and the first time he went in there and we started bowling short balls at him with a machine, and when I say short, I mean chest height, 65 miles an hour, he was backing away. And I'm watching this thinking, well, he's frightened of the ball, so we need to work at this. The reason he was frightened of the ball is because he was stood way too sideways on and he felt like he couldn't get at it, which is similar to maybe the position Jonathan Trotter's got in at times against Mitchell Johnson because of the difficult angle. Mm. So, you know, when we went down to tell the boy to be a little bit more open, you know, so he gets a better position to get his hands at the ball and the full blade of the bat, suddenly he plays it really well, we up the speed a bit more, and there's not a problem. So his fear was there because he had a flawed technique. Now, when he was given a better technique, he didn't have no reason to fear the ball because he felt comfortable, he could play it or duck it. Now, there'll be other people that you give them the better technique, you bang it in, and they've still got that, oh, I'm going to get hit by the ball. And like I said, there's been some top players out there that have had those thoughts go through their head. And you can do something about it. You can't just write a kid off because he's backed away from a few and say, well, he's no good. Because your job as a coach is to try and turn that player around, put him into better positions, build up the practices. And you actually might find that he's actually a really good player in the making, and then he won't slip through the net.
And how the tactics fit into this compared to grooving the technique? How do you move that on to the tactical thing of you have to bat in different ways for different situations?
Okay, obviously it should work like a pyramid. You get your foundations in position first, and you gradually, you know, put on the other bits and pieces. So, for instance, as coaches, we need to make sure if we have 10 sessions, we need to be trying to nail the basics first. So lots and lots of grooving of front foot shots. And if the process is slow and the players are improving, you know, slower than you would like, you need to keep working more on grooving until you've got them where you want them. Yes, near the end of the session, you might do a little bit on tactics, but your main focus is on grooving. And as you then start moving through your program, the switch flips over to tactical. So you do less grooving and more tactical scenarios. But again, there's no point in your first few sessions of the winter going straight into doing loads of tactical work, trying to hit various cones, square of the wicket, all that sort of stuff. Because when the summer comes, your game plans are going to be limited because your basics or your basic technique of hitting in the V, both front and back foot, is flawed. So it's counterproductive. And again, as coaches, we all like to keep chopping and changing and doing different things to keep our players interested. But again, you mustn't lose sight of what is happening with your players. So for me, you need to do lots and lots and lots of grooving. When you think you've got your players with all their basics there or thereabouts, then you start working more towards tactical scenarios. And if you think your players are slipping back on the technical side, you drop back in to do some more grooving practices. So it's you've got to sort of balance it, but loads of grooving, more so, probably a little bit more than you think you should do at the start of a program or a session, and then tactical stuff more towards the back end of it. And then you're into the summer, and then depending how you're playing, you know, do you need to go back and revisit grooving a particular shot, or do you need to go back and revisit grooving a particular scenario? You know, that's all a bit more detailed to individual players. But the most important thing is to work on those basics. Because if you get your basics of hitting in the V to very high standard, it's quite easy to go out in a game and hit one square on the leg side and hit one a bit wider on the offside. But if you are just practicing doing that in the winter and neglecting hitting in the V because you think players can already do that, then it's not going to work very well for you in the summer. So for me, if you can get blokes hitting between mid-on and mid-off to the highest technical standards, then I think we should spend that's your goal. We should spend hours and hours and hours doing that, because if all you practice is hitting square the wicket and take for granted hitting straight because it's a boring practice because it's been done before, all that's going to happen is that techniques are going to deteriorate. So in the V, it's never going to change. Now, what makes me I've never seen anyone do a batting masterclass on hitting in the V, hitting straight, when that's what all the top players are generally trying to do most of the time. You see a lot of sweep practices and various other things, but the power of learning to hit in the V to good technical standards is key, really key.